This month, our worship theme is trust. And we're going to explore that in several ways. Next week, I'm going to talk about truth, which shares a core root meaning with the word trust. The week after that, I'm going to talk about how white people can come to trust themselves on racial issues so that white people can be trustworthy, more trustworthy for people of color, and so that genuine trust can flow back and forth. And on the 24th, Tom Peterson is going to share a sermon, and I believe that is going to be on how we trust ourselves, which is the ground of our trust for others. So today I'm going to talk about how trust is built and sustained among people. And as Ed was speaking of, I'm thinking mostly about how that happens in this congregation, because we're a very special kind of group. We're not a family, we're not a workplace. We are a religious community, a community where trust is paramount and necessary for our life together. So first, I want to share a couple of brief true stories about trust from the internet. So Mike P. writes, "Mr. W. was my physical education teacher and basketball coach. When he arrived at my school, I was going into grade 9 and heavily lacking direction. I was part of a big social group which involved a lot of mischief, and I was easily led into situations that would get me into a lot of trouble. One day, when we were in the fitness room for a session, Mr. W. left the room. Right away, the majority of the boys went into a storeroom and started stealing small pieces of equipment. I, for some reason, and for the first time, did not join in. Upon his return, Mr. W. looked into the storeroom and knew that the room had been entered. He insisted that we all line up at the door so that he could search us on our way to the next class. I was sixth in line. As the boys ahead of me left the room, Mr. W. found various items on them and made a note of their names and explained that their parents would be contacted along with the police. When I arrived at the front of the line, Mr. W. simply said, 'On you go, Mike. I trust you.' Those seven words changed my life. I now coach children of ages ranging from 4 to 19 years old. I'm in my final year of a college degree, and I have played basketball, rugby, and soccer regularly since grade 9. Without those seven words, I don't know where I would be." Wendy D. writes a story of trust in the workplace. "Recently, I messed up and forgot to make a request for an employee's salary raise. The employee emailed me about it, 2 months after it should have happened. I immediately apologized and started thinking of excuses as to why it had happened. As I got to probably the third excuse, only in my head, I realized that excuses were the wrong way to go. He had asked to meet with me. I invited him over and apologized again. I told him that I could probably come up with a dozen excuses or reasons why I forgot, but that the bottom line was that I had forgotten to do it, that I was sorry, and I was working to fix the mistake so that he would receive the raise from the time he was entitled to it. He left feeling better about the situation, and so did I. This took vulnerability on my part, but the result was worth it. Oddly enough, this incident seemed to increase our mutual trust rather than decrease it. Go figure." I am sure that many of us, probably all of us, have stories of how our trust has been broken in religious communities, or how having more trust might have made a religious community a better place. I'm sure that many of us, if not most of us, if not all of us, has stories of what it has meant to us to receive trust from others who have received vulnerability from others. I am sure that all of us have experienced times when we have broken the trust of others. So I invite you to think about your stories of trust in religious communities, whether it's this one or another one, and share them with others. Go out of your way to talk about those things, if you will. So I looked for articles and insights on trust building for this sermon, and I found, I mean, there were many lists of various traits or practices or qualities that were necessary for building trust, but a lot of it was workplace-oriented, and nothing really seemed as deep as I was hoping for, as deep and powerful as a religious community needs, because as you know, and as Ed said, religious communities are different. So then I found this video from a woman named Brené Brown. She is a researcher and professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Houston. She's also an author, storyteller, and public speaker. And I would say, if you watch one of her videos, she's a rock star with how people greet her when she comes onto a stage. And although she's not a minister or a theologian or a church researcher, I have found so much of her work to be meaningful in worship and in the lives of congregations. So in the video, which is named The Anatomy of Trust, Brown lays out the essential aspects for developing trust in the form of an easy-to-remember acronym, which is the only kind we should ever have. So before I get into that, though, I want to share with you the definition of trust that Brené Brown uses from a man named Charles Feltman, who is an organizational development specialist. Trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. Let's read that. Trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. I like this too. It seems to get to the core of what genuine trust is, and it's very inclusive because that something could be our emotions or our actions or our story, any aspect of our lives, including our bodies and our physical spaces. And Brené Brown also uses Feltman's definition of distrust. Distrust comes when what I have shared with you that is important to me is not safe with you. Let's read that. Distrust comes when what I have shared with you that is important to me is not safe with you. Again, this definition applies to so many things, not just about what we share verbally. We share bodies, we share stories, we share relationship, we share intimacy, we share work and time and space, all things of importance and value. A couple of other generalities about trust before I get into Brené Brown's anatomy. Zay Frank, the author and narrator of the video we watched for meditation, you might recall he said this about trust in the video. He said, "Trust is the slow and steady practice of learning about the capacity of the world." So, trust takes time, and it is a practice of figuring out and learning how to give and receive trust and who and what it's possible to trust. And finally, a last generality, Brown also says in her video, "Trust is built in very small moments. That's the small and steady part. Not usually some big, grandiose event is going to build trust, although it might break it. But it's not going to be built by one great big thing. It's over time, those small moments. So we have this definition of trust from Charles Feltman. Trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. From Z. Frank, trust is a practice, a slow and steady practice of learning about the capacity of the world. And from Brown and her research, trust is built in very small moments. So in this video, as I said, The Anatomy of Trust, Brown outlines the necessary aspect of trust using this very easy to remember acronym, BRAVING, BRAVING. And I've wanted to use this font forever, but it's really hard to read. And I thought, well, if it's great big capital letters, maybe I can get away with it. So braving, because when we trust, we are braving connection with someone, right?
Yeah.
So let's get into the acronym. B is for boundaries. So I can trust you only when you are clear about your boundaries and you hold yours, and when I am clear about my boundaries and you respect them. Both are essential for my trust. R is for reliability. I can only trust you if you do what you say you are going to do, and not just once, but over and over and over again. And there's kind of an important aspect to this. This means we all have to know our limits so that we don't routinely make promises beyond our capacity to fulfill them, which is a little bit like boundaries too. So, reliability isn't just doing what you say you're going to once, but many, many times. A is for accountability. I can only trust you if, when you make a mistake, you own it, apologize for it, and make amends to the best of your ability. This is the other side of that. I can also only trust you if, when I make a mistake, you allow me to own it, apologize for it, and make amends. Because if, when I make a mistake, you don't allow me to do that, you are not allowing me to be accountable to you. V stands for the vault. I can only trust you when what I share with you, you hold in confidence. And that what you share with me, I will hold in confidence. And Brown's research showed that there is another aspect to the vault, another door, she said. And that is, when you come to me and tell me a story about someone else, you are sharing a story that is not yours to share. And my trust of you is diminished, even though you're not talking about me. So it's not just about you holding my confidences. Trust requires that I see you acknowledging confidentiality all over, generally, with everybody. And Brown also really calls out something that is sad but true. Too often we use the sharing of stories that are not ours to tell as a way of building connection with others. If you don't have anything nice to say, come sit by me, right? Yeah. So in that case, it's an attempt to build intimacy on trashing the same people. And that's not real intimacy, and it's not real trust. I can only trust you when you act from a place of integrity and encourage me to do the same. And as with many things, Brown said she looked for definitions of integrity and she didn't like any of them, so she looked back at her data and came up with her own. So it's three things that I don't have up here. Choosing courage over comfort. Choosing what's right over what's fun, fast, or easy. And practicing your values, not just preaching them. Choosing courage over comfort. Choosing what's right over what's fast, fun, or easy. Practicing your values, not just preaching them. N equals non-judgment. I can only trust you when I can fall apart, ask for help, and be in struggle without being judged by you. As in, judged for my worth. Like if I'm falling apart and asking for help and struggling, there's something wrong with me. And you can only trust me when you can fall apart, ask for help, and be in struggle without being judged by your worth by me. This is a hard one because most of us are more comfortable in helping than in asking for help. Well, who likes to help? Let's see. Who loves to ask for help? Trust requires being vulnerable, and we sometimes are not so great at that. So we can even set up relationships that we think are trusting because we're there for someone else no matter what. But that relationship is a true one of trust if and only if we can also ask for help and receive it. So here's the hook. If we unconsciously assign a lesser value to ourselves when we need help, we're also going to think less of people who ask us for help. That's just how our brains work. We will judge them as less worthy. And we do this because we do not wish to be vulnerable. It's too scary. So we can set up these fake one-way relationships that we think are trusting and are not because we are only in the power place of the helper. And that is not really trust. Generosity. I can only trust you if you assume the most generous things about my words, my intentions, and my behaviors, and you check in with me. So if I make a mistake and let you down, you will make the most generous assumption about what was going on with me and why I did what I did and check that out with me. And that could mean telling me what you expected of me, telling me how I didn't do it and how you felt about that, but also that you do know I care about you and that I do know better. I cannot trust you if, when I make a mistake and you feel it, that you cut me off from communication, and maybe even wait for the right moment to unload on me and let me know that I hurt you deliberately or purposefully or whatever else you assumed about that. So that trust requires that when mistakes are made, that contact is maintained, and that the challenging things are checked out, and that we remain generous in our estimates of ourselves and one another. This is like ninja level trust building. It really, really is. So that is the anatomy of trust, and it is complex, braving, boundaries, reliability, accountability, the vault, integrity, non-judgment, and generosity. So breaking trust down this way gives us the words and the understanding for when trust is broken. Like, we can describe the thing that happened, or maybe more than one of these. So it's not vague or nebulous. It's clear, and it's behaviors that we can define. And then we can ask for what we need from each other. So that way we don't have to have this huge thing hanging out there when we might say, "I don't trust you." Because that's pretty huge. We can say what it is and focus it right down. Because I'm sure that each of us vary in our ability to do braving. We might be super strong on most of them and weaker in another. And so then there'll be those patterns in our lives. So as Brown notes, these qualities of braving also come into play with our trust of ourselves, our self-trust. Self-trust is really the ground and the foundation of our being able to trust and our ability to be trustworthy. There's a great quote from Maya Angelou where she says, "I don't trust people who don't love themselves but say, 'I love you.'" I don't trust people who don't love themselves but say, "I love you." So Brown's final comments are, so sometimes when you're struggling with trust of someone, examine how you treat yourself first. Because we can't ask people to give us something that we don't think we're worthy to receive. And you will know you are worthy of receiving trust when you trust yourself above everyone else. You will know you are worthy of receiving trust when you trust yourself, using all the bravings with you above anyone else. So trust through braving is necessary for the life and health of this congregation, as Ed said. Trust is necessary for right relationship. And I think there's a fair amount of the braving built into our seven principles and our covenant of right relations. So in the coming weeks, I invite you to consider Brown's understanding of the anatomy of trust. I know this sermon was a whole lot of stuff, so you can ask me for a copy, and I will make sure it gets up online as a reference very soon. And I suggest that you watch her video. It is only 22 minutes long, and you can just Google, it's YouTube, Anatomy of Trust. And so I invite you to consider the idea of braving, not only in relationship to yourself and your relations, your family, your friends, your work, but here. Above all, here. We must build trust by offering it and being willing to receive it. And that really can only happen when we understand what trust is made of. Braving. May it be so always for us. Amen and blessed be.